call my pool medium would be
an insult to medium.
Do you have to get lucky and maybe dodge some of those matchups?
What percentage of Ancestral Recall is good enough for Standard?
Really sweet green, white, blue for Legacy built with Format All-Star Runic Armor Solo. And
it's erroneous to say I think I know.
Being a tryhard, that's one thing that I'm lacking.
I do think it may be better, like, to speed build.
I felt like I was already on, like, the back foot falling backward more with someone waterboarding me at the same time.
It felt like an adults-only unset. Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to a very special on-the-road episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, and wait a minute, you're sitting right next to me. This is so unusual. It hasn't happened since Eternal Weekend in Pittsburgh last year. He's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Thibbetts. Matt is actually drooling on me, and Brian's playing footsie with me. We're so close to each other from our VRBO here on the, southwest side of the convention center in Minneapolis for GP Minneapolis this weekend. We're going to get into our weekend, our top three thoughts from GP Minneapolis, what we've experienced both in the community and in and around Minneapolis itself, as well as talk about some of the other events that have been going on throughout the world of Magic this week as we lead into Pro Tour 25 coming up next week at the very venue we've been at all weekend. Guys, we're going to get it started as usual. Since they have blue laws in Minnesota, we are just drinking Miller High Life, all we could make away with at the packaged liquor store before they closed. Why don't we start with the favorite thing that you've had to drink while we've been here since Friday this weekend? Matt, you've had a couple different things going on. What's been the best drink you've had?
The beer that we had out of our little get-together last night.
The Grain Belt?
Yes, the Grain Belt.
This was kegged Grain Belt.
Yeah.
Grain Belt has the rep for being a discount beer, but it was good.
Whatever you drink out of a can, if you have it on draft, it's always going to be better. Mm-hmm. But I would kind of second that with one caveat, but the Grain Belt was really, really good.
Grain Belt was I was really impressed.
Yep.
Brian, what's the best drink you've had?
Not to be so hoity-toity.
I know what you're going to say, and that's fine, because I would probably agree.
That cucumber gimlet I had at the restaurant last night was so delicious. Maybe followed second by the Grain Belt, and third, Sean, the glass of port you ordered for dessert was so delicious.
The Tawny 10, that's my pick.
I
like port, but I don't have the developed palate for that liquor to tell really the fine from the not so fine. And so the suggestion by our waitress, who did a great job of recommending sort of an intro level port, and it was amazing, and it really capped off a great meal that we had.
It was great. It was a really, really great meal. That cucumber gimlet was a perfect beginning. And to bookend it with that port at the end, yum.
And it pains me to say this, but we owe Matt a thanks because he harangued us into going to this Italian place downtown. And I'm like, it's a beautiful day. Why do we want to just jam all this pasta in us? And he just kept haranguing us, and it was fantastic.
It really was. And if you would have ordered the turkey burger, I would have punched you in your
gut.
So
he harangues us into going to the Italian. What was the name of it, Matt?
Zillo.
Zillo. That was amazing. As we're looking to order, looks down and goes, oh, burgers. I'll get a burger. And Brian and I both picked up our drinks, and we're ready to just dump them on his head if he ordered a burger after haranguing us into an Italian place. I ordered the house ravioli, and it was amazing. What's the full story?
They weren't normal burgers. There was like tuna burgers. There was a turkey burger.
No, I get it. It's still a burger.
Oh, yeah. And I immediately changed my mind. I did.
Okay, good. Yes. I'm glad you did, because I think what you ordered, the chicken parm, looked amazing.
The chicken parm was amazing.
You didn't give
amazing.
Me a bite, even though I asked for one. You just turned the other way.
I threw it on the ground for the pigeons instead.
You know what? That's what he thinks of me. I had the pasta tutto mare, which, oh, my God. The amount of seafood in that. It could have been measured by pounds.
That was just one of the great experiences we've had. Friday night, we got recommended to go to a place by a local we met at the GP site, and it turned out that he misunderstood my request. I was trying to say we want kind of a brew pub where we can eat and drink, and he thought I just said to drink after we ate. So
it's not unreasonable.
We left the recommendation. We thought about going back, but Himmler's or Himmelmeyer's, whatever it was on the corner, ended up being a fantastic find. The outdoor the weather this weekend has been to die for.
Yes.
So we've been on all these outdoor patios. Chicken tacos I had were amazing. The beer was great. Zelo's on Saturday night, and then we were at the Brits Pub next to the convention center before doing the cast today. If you want to gain weight, this is a town to live in.
Oh, yeah, because summer, you can winter, go outside fall. 3 months out of the year.
You know what?
But I think you could, just been amazing.
Summer, you can gain weight in this by what we just did this weekend, because I would have loved to have seen a scale measurement before we left and then after we get home.
Idleness and beer drinking, those lead to weight gain.
Cardboard will do that to you.
But thank you to Minneapolis as a whole. It's been an amazing weekend.
Yeah, the whole neighborhood, the vibe, it's just fantastic.
And thank you to you, our patrons, for helping us. Our Patreon support, patreon.com/tryhards, helps make this available. And we thought about you while we were at the venue, and we picked up some cool stuff, we think, at the venue that we're going to be giving away on our raffles
real
coming up
cool
in
very
future
cool.
episodes.
Yep. Very excited about that. So
that's our thank you to you, and you're going to be reaping the rewards of this going forward. And if Renee wins for the third time in a row, she's completely cut off. Renee, we love you. Sorry you couldn't make it this weekend. Guys, we're here. GP Minneapolis, 1,349 players for Core Set 19 Limited. 104 players out of that 1,349 went home with 0 points. And we can say proudly that we weren't a part of that. The tryhards were not part,
we were not part of that.
Of the 104 pointless players, 300 players made day two. So day one, the way it worked out, they give you your sealed pool. Then you play 8 rounds. After you play 8 rounds, everyone who is on at least 18 points plays in round 9. Then they cut it after round 9 as well. So only 300 players made day two out of the 1,349 that were here this weekend. The GP is still going on as we record this. They're in the top 8 draft, so hopefully that'll play out well. This was a fun event for the tryhards to do. I haven't played a limited GP since, I want to say, SCG's Gold Rush at Charlotte in 2012. Matt, it was your first sealed event at the GP level. Brian, I believe your first GP sealed event as well.
Yep.
How was your experience, Matt? What did you think? Give us the quick and dirty version of your pool and kind of how did it play out for you?
So the quick and dirty version is I opened up my pool and one of my rares was a Omniscience, and then one of my Mythics, and two of my rares were that stupid Detection Tower.
Off to a good start.
Yeah, off to a great start. To call my pool medium would be
an insult to medium?
Yes. The pool was difficult to build. I suboptimally chose one card that I chose to take Vengeance instead of a Macabre Waltz, I believe it's called.
Yep.
Played a black-white deck. Really was just super medium, like just subpar. Ended up going, I think I went 3-1-2 before I dropped. Took a second loss, and I had a draw, so that knocked me out. And I was able to outplay my opponents for the wins, but I just, when I got up against those decks that had good power levels in them, I mean, I had 3 Luminous Bonds, but there's a lot of cards that have battlefield effects. And that's what I was losing to, was at one point, my opponent had that Black-Green Archer. It did 16
poison
points of damage to me.
Ooh. Oh, Poison-Tipped
yeah.
Archer. As Sean picked for his card and didn't get it. Mm-hmm. None of us got, well, actually, nope. I did get mine, but it was a trap card.
And I was just salty, had a kind of a bad experience with some locals Friday night. Just nothing crazy to talk about there. But so I was a little salty already.
Not at the GP, Minneapolis.
Yeah,
itself.
In Minneapolis. And so then I decided to go to the art show at about 4 o'clock. And that's a whole nother story there. Like playing in the limited, this is my first GP level limited, I believe. I may have played one, but I've done quite a few like Star City Games ones. I mean, I'd do it again, but the price, honestly, the price for what you get and how long you have to play and everything is just, that's a hard pill to swallow for me.
Yeah, I opened up what I want to call a skewed power pool. I had Patient Rebuilding, I had Chromium, and I just had like 21 other cards that I played in my deck with those two. It worked pretty well early. I had some decent removal, nothing crazy to write home about, and some synergy stuff, Omen Speakers, Anticipate to help me find my better cards. Started off at 2-0, and then my deck just decided that I should go the rest of the day with it just pooping on me. mulligans to five, all lands, no lands, all of these things that just happen in Magic. And I just had a confluence of them, it seems, in the next couple of rounds. Brian, what did you have, and how did it start for you?
It was, first of all, I felt like I had some power in the pool. I had a Sarkhan's Unsealing, I had a Vivian's Invocation, I had a Palakka Worm, and a Colossal Dreadmaw. These are very, very powerful Magic cards. Mm-hmm. If you can't get to it, and you're basically dead on board prior to turn six or seven, those cards don't do anything for you. And that was the problem, is trying to ramp into that without a lot of fixing, without a lot of early board play that's going to stabilize the battlefield. Didn't have a ton of removal. I was just kind of relying on maybe some slower builds, and the first round I played was definitely not. It was a very, very fast, kind of a blue-black Flyers deck. He had a slow draw game, too, and I just completely came over the top of him. Sarkhan's Unsealing, casting Palakka Worm, wipes his board, gains me seven life. It's an instant scoop, and the guy's eyebrows went up, and you can kind of see those beads of sweat forming. You know, you just feel like you're winning more with that kind of build. So I was not able to turn that into anything. I eventually went 1-3 drop. I kind of had a transformational sideboard just because I think I built my main – no, I know I built my main deck wrong, but I was able to identify what I needed to do. So if I kind of punted game one or else won game one, I still went to like a certain like 12-card sideboard into game two where I went like a leaner green-red. It worked out a lot better for me. I felt like I was in every game. All of my matches went to three games. I just could never, you know, close the door, and that was the tough pill to swallow for me this weekend. So what you open obviously has a lot to do with how you do, but also play skill has what you have, and I think being a tryhard, that's one thing that I'm lacking a little bit in that category. So, yeah, I wasn't as salty as Matt was about, you know, how my sealed event went, even though I wish it would have gone better.
Here's my thought then.
Yeah.
Do you think that the preparation we were doing, you think that was very beneficial, like, you know, practicing sealed
pulls? I do think it was.
Yes, it was, definitely.
Because even though we didn't have a, quote, busted pool, I think if you rated our pools on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give mine a 6 for playability, a 7 for potential power, and your guys, I think, would probably slot in a little bit lower than that.
Well, mine was 5 definitely to 6, like a 4,
yeah.
Probably.
5 to 6,
but
yeah.
We all, I think, maximized the builds that we were given. And that's something you can only do with format, time, and experience. And you're like, well, it hasn't been out that long. We invested some resources to pick up product so that we could open pools with various people who played the game in different styles. And I think it was hugely beneficial. Even though I didn't have the results that I wanted and ran into mulligan issues and all the things that happened, here's how I know it had benefits. They give you a half an hour to build your deck after your pool is checked for accuracy. So they were opened, you were given a sheet with your pool on it, it was verified by the person sitting across from you, and that's the process now. And then they say, you have 30 minutes to build your pool. At 15 minutes, I knew what I was playing. Mm-hmm. I knew what the cards that were above the power level were and the cards that were below, which trap cards to stay away from. And did I get my pool 100% perfect? No, but I'm confident that I'm in the low 90s of how accurately I built that pool. And I think that's what that practice did. Did you have the same feeling, Brian, or were you still struggling?
About 15 minutes at that mark that you mentioned into this building process, I feel like I had the pool. And then I started to kind of second guess and say, ooh, could I make it a little bit better with a third color? Ooh,
so you hurled it.
I hurled it.
Yeah.
I hurled it up.
I was just going to say, I tinkered the crap out of it.
And so I added a third color, and I think that was the trap for me. The mana became a lot more inconsistent. I didn't have the fixing of like a mana lith or some of the green creatures that I wanted to fix the mana a little bit better. When I kind of realized that, I kind of said, okay, I think I'm just going to have to take my medicine, maybe game one in each of these rounds, and then just go into some kind of transformational sideboard, which is what I did. And like I said, games two and three were always competitive. Game one was not always competitive, even though I won some of them. Some of them, my opponent just had a bad draw. Even going 1-3, I felt like I was in a lot of these matches. So the practice definitely helped. I knew what cards to stay away from. But, man, I was just trying to force something.
We went and did the team trios, team sealed. And if you have never played in a team event where you have to, in sealed, get 12 packs and then build three decks, Matt, you've probably had this experience or at least been told this in the military. you don't know someone until they're in that foxhole next to you. I think I know how you two play Magic. I know how Brian plays Magic, and I know how Matt plays Magic, so it's erroneous to say I think I know. I know how you two play Magic. That was stressful because you're all approaching the game with your preferred played style so that you're trying to build the most powerful decks that are all the closest to your preferred played style. Being able to take that hat off and evaluate those decks in the lens of, okay, Brian's going to be playing this. This plays to his strengths. Maybe this card is a 6 out of 10 and this one's a 6.5, but he's going to be most comfortable with and get the most out of the 6, leave the half a point of power. I'm not saying that happened, but just to be able to look at pools in a different way, we needed every moment. It was stressful, and our pool was, let's be honest, dog.
Oh, it was terrible.
So we had
the amount of commons and uncommons we did not have. We weren't asking for bomb rares. The amount of playable uncommons and commons that we actually opened in our sealed pools, I would have just gladly taken for these.
Yeah, we ended up building a rug deck that Matt played that had good high-end creatures and a little bit of removal. Brian, you ended up with the red-white Boros deck, and I had the black-white life gain deck. And by deck, that's an overly aggressive use of a collection of cardboard that is legal in Magic the Gathering.
I like the way you're justifying this.
That was kind of what we worked through today. But the process, I think that's the one thing that we could have done to prepare for today. And we only decided to do this because we weren't playing day two at the GP. But I would have loved to put ourselves through that process of, okay, we're going to open these 6 packs, we're going to take 45 minutes, and we're going to make 3 decks, just so that we had that experience. And if you haven't had that with someone and you're planning to do this, invest in the 12 packs and the hour with your teammates, because it will inform the team about the creative process and how you're going to work, and it'll make it a little bit smoother.
We kind of built our pools, looked at some color combinations, built our pools, and kind of like shifted to the left and looked at each other's decks. All of our decks, I think, were
which
probably...
we did intuitively, which I was fascinated by as a sort of tryhard sociologist who only studies the tryhards. we all kind of did it intuitively, which was weird.
I mean, I think we were just
it was really weird.
I think we're all 21 cards the same, something like that, 22 cards. And
as per those decks.
Yeah, as per each of those decks. Yes. And you know, we were arguing about the 21st, 22nd, 23rd cards. And then the other thing was, I actually built my deck, had about 15 minutes left.
No, and you asked me how much time do we have left. I said 7 minutes. And you said, I think I went too deep in this color and we need to triage in a third color. So we went from a red-green less than mediocre monsters deck to a rug less than mediocre monsters deck.
Yes.
But I think that was the right call, though.
To play Sarkhan and Vivictus, which neither were that impressive.
It was a rug deck splashing Vivictus.
Yeah. Rug deck splashing Vivictus, but also
now,
I
in
think
your
the
defense,
blue
you
had
it
was great.
Yes, but in your defense, to splash Vivictus, you had Sarkhan, Dryad Greenseeker, Elvish Rejuvenator. So you had all
and
of
I had
these.
To do the tap
land. And, yeah,
and the tap
yeah. So you had all of those ways to find the one black.
Yeah,
and
just
that was
for the one card.
And that was the issue, though, because we have definitely determined that removal is huge in this format. And so to get the dispersed, to get the totally lost.
Well, Brian, you're leading us here, which is the next conversation I wanted to have. What are your thoughts on this format after going through this week? We each played individually, and then we played as a team.
The thing is, you have to definitely have some kind of interaction with your opponent. If you have no removal, if you have nothing to deal with the other side of the board, it's going to be a problem. And that was where I think most of the people who did poorly in the main event probably ran into that. They didn't have the quality of removal, the correct type of removal. The card that stands out is like Luminous Bonds, something that just completely takes a card out of the game. Doesn't put it in the graveyard to allow your opponent to have interaction. Sorry, Sean. It just basically blanks it because there's no way to get rid of that in this format. There's just no way to do that. So if you have a lot of that and you can kind of follow on curve to get your own battlefield set up, I think you're doing really, really well. The sealed deck I played really didn't do anything until turn 3 or 4, and that was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If I was doing something early on turn 2, I felt like I was ahead and that the game was well in hand. If I was doing something on turn 4, I felt like I was already on like the back foot falling backward more with someone waterboarding me at the same time. I was just like, I feel like I'm out of this game.
Yeah, I'm just going to follow up with that. The removal is so eh in this format that I have found a new respect for creatures that bring an additional creature with them onto the battlefield.
Oh,
no matter how insignificant you think that second body may be, the ability to go wide and to further stress the removal in this format is the one thing that I came away impressed with from certain decks and deck builders in this format over the weekend. Matt, what about you?
I made a comment to some of the guys that are traveling with us here. I said, you know, the first person to flood loses. What I meant by that is that you have to have a consistent curve. You need to have consistency over power. There's very few bombs that just say, win the game. The removal, if you have the removal, it's fine. But, you know, like I talked earlier, you know, the Luminous Bonds. Yeah, it takes out of the game, but you still have activated abilities on it. There's a lot of triggered and activated abilities. And cards that have a big butt on them, those are high value cards.
And there's a lot of cards in this set that have very different power and toughness. And the ones with the low toughness, as Matt said, are the ones that are most vulnerable to, you know, a shock out of red.
Or Skeletal Archer is a common one.
Skeletal Archer, the one. There's a lot of one butts in white that Skeleton Archer just takes down. So if you have combat tricks like Trumpeter's Blast or the Angel that comes in and gives everything 1/1 and Vigilance in white, that'll make your high toughness or high power creature, better, but it's just for one turn or two turns, and you know, you have to take advantage of that. It's kind of glass cannonish. If you have the big creatures that you can stick, they will stay on the board, and then you just kind of keep following up, and that's the thing. It kind of snowballs out. If you can keep the pressure on, that's where you're going to be definitely favored.
I know we're not Marshall Sutcliffe and the crew at Limited Resources, but the cards that I came away with, rares and mythics, you can't count on them in limited formats. So you look at the outstanding uncommons, and we all did our picks for what we were hoping to play this weekend. I found new respect for a couple of uncommons. The green 5-drop, 5/5 Vigilant Baloth.
Amazing. That's just an easy
one. It's one of the bomb uncommons.
Yeah.
It is a nightmare to have to handle on the other side of the board.
Yep.
So watch out for some of those things as you get the opportunity to hopefully enjoy this format.
Skeletal Archers.
Skeleton Archers.
One.
And you don't even need the combo that gives all your skeletons death touch.
No, it's just you attack in, you know, and it's like, oh, I'll block. But you have to be thinking, oh, do they just go drop a Skeletal Archer here and then just wipe my creature out?
It's almost another combat trick in the post-combat session to sort of trade up at that time. Guys, what were your top three moments from this weekend? Wizards, when they do coverage, has usually a top five moments or top five cards from an event. So we're going to steal a little bit of this and go top three. I'll lead off as you guys get your thoughts together. After the main event turned sour for me on Saturday, some of us jumped into a legacy event. So I got to get out Blue-Black Reanimator. I was excited to do it, not because I was out of the main event, but this is the first time I've gotten to play it since the legacy changes with Gitaxian Probe and Deathrite Shaman being banned. And boy, the fun is back. I was able to really do some sweet stuff and freeing up the two slots in the deck that used to be dedicated to Collective Brutality to help the matchup against Deathrite Shaman being now a Spell Pierce and a Limdol's Vault. There is just so much that you can do with those cards. I really enjoyed it. In round three, I got matched up with April King. You might know her as Cube April. And instead of playing, we actually just sat with a friend of hers who was there, talked about community issues that were going on. It was just a side event, three-round event. We had both said, hey, we might want to go have dinner. Do you want to play this? Do you want to split the prize? And I said, well, if we reveal what decks we're playing, then we can't split because somebody might want to actually play because they have a good matchup. And she looked at me and said, I'm playing lands. And I said, we're going to play. Because one of Blue-Black's top three easiest matchup is lands. I said, I would like to play. And we both laughed. And it was a lot of fun to talk with her, talk about community issues as content creators and people who have a larger view of the game, Brian, you say, as ambassadors. So being able to talk with her for quite some time and get in-depth was fun. My number two, to get together with Mike and Scott, Vorthos Mike and Booze Cube here at the VRBO, get to know them and their crew and have that experience. That was a lot of fun. And number one, I'm going to go with the obvious pick. The food has been...
yes.
I have gained like 5 pounds since we got here 48 hours ago. We've just had amazing food throughout the weekend. So those are my top three from the weekend. Brian, do you have a kind of top three from the GP Mini so far?
Absolutely, I do. I've been calling myself Dad all weekend because I was the guy who kind of did the VRBO reservation and, you know, was one of the vehicles that drove up here and things like that. And so sometimes you put a little pressure on yourself, like, ooh, I hope everything goes well. I hope it's a good place, etc. So I would say, first of all, the accommodations of Minneapolis. So, Sean, I'm going to kind of cheat a little bit. The food and the accommodations of the house that we're in has been fantastic. The weather did not disappoint in any way, shape, or form. Oh. So thanks, Mother Nature. My number two, I would have to say, is one of those things where I was trying to struggle with. This is kind of a selfish thing. I was trying out a new Legacy deck. I hadn't really had any practice with, didn't even have all the cards for it. There was a mono blue painter list that I kind of had just in the back of my mind. Tobias Dietrich, who's a European player, had started to pilot something like this maybe a year ago in the European circles, and it seemed fun to me, kind of getting back to my Magic roots. I loved mill strategies, as Sean has said, and, you know, Painter Grindstone is one of those things, but people always think about it as Imperial Painter with red, and I'm like, no, this is good. Back to basics, War of Invention, all the disruption that Counterspell and Spell Pierce,
Let me jump in here just for a second. It is not a 60-card focused deck. It is a 58-card deck that is trying to roll the dice on back to basics.
Yes.
It is the Blue Blood Moon. And boy, did you get after the last remaining check pile player.
I did. My first two rounds, I made some misplays round one, which it was fine. Death and Taxes kind of took me to lunch, ate my lunch. Took me to lunch, ate my lunch, and made me pay the bill afterward in round two. But round three, I played a check pile player and was able to stick back to basics both rounds and just kind of had a little chagrin scoop from the player. And he was just like, that didn't go very well. And I'm like, sorry, dude. But it happens to all of us. So that was it. So it was a tie between that and the other part of it was kind of simplifying life. I brought a bunch of cards to sell this weekend, and it was something I'd never done before, but kind of culling the collection, organizing my collection back in Galesburg, getting stuff that I haven't used, you know, trying to just get rid of that stuff. It was great and very freeing, if you've never done this, bringing like a two-row box of cards or bigger to an event, getting paid in cold hard cash, and walking away with nothing except the bills in your wallet was actually really cool. The number one thing I would say about Minneapolis, about this trip that is going to stick with me, is actually the combining of my Magic worlds. I got the Try Hard world, and I have the Shark Tank back in Galesburg, and kind of getting both of these groups together for the same weekend has been really, really fun. We have 8 people staying in this VRBO. It's been really fun seeing Hurley get to know kind of the Hurley of the other group, Knowles, seeing Sean get to know the Sean of the other group, which is Nash, seeing the Wolfmeyer getting to know the other Wolfmeyer of the other group, which is Levi. These are all kind of, you know, mirror images. I always am reminded of that scene in Shaun of the Dead where you have the two groups meeting in the backyard, and it's kind of like they pass each other.
That is an absolute classic.
Yes, it is. So I felt like a little bit of, I'm going to be the sociologist in this and like the dad, as I said at the very beginning, watching these two groups interact, and it's been nothing but phenomenal.
What
so
about
really
the Tibbetts meeting the Tibbetts of the groups?
Well, see, he gets to himself in both groups.
Yeah, I get to look in the mirror every morning and say, oh, yeah,
you're all right. Yeah, you're Sean in both groups, and Sean of the Dead.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, my God, I'm going to think about this trip so much differently now. Matt, top three from this weekend?
So I would say number three for me. I didn't actually play a ton of Magic, and part of that was because I flew up here, so I brought a very small box of Magic cards. I had a really sweet green-white-blue deck for Legacy built with Format All-Star Runic Armor Seller. And
gee, Sean and I may be throwing up a little bit in our mouths.
It's been the running joke has been adding Runic Armorsaur to everything from
every deck,
from pasta to what you ordered to drink this weekend. You know what this would be good with, this beer? Runic Armorsaur.
The pizza later, actually, Sean, is going to be really good with some Runic Armorsaur.
Man, Runic Armorsaur and pepperoni? Oh, it's great.
But so I had that mostly built, and I brought that with me, and I needed like a couple of nobles, couple odds and ends, and I looked, and I'm like, I just don't want to pay this much because the prices on site were a little high in general for a lot of. I mean, there were some deals to be found, but generally they were a tad high. So I ended up just playing the that one draft and the main event, and then our team trios. So I didn't play a ton of Magic, but Magic wise, the two events that will stick out in my mind are one during the main event. I had the 1/4, I think it's called Sun Cleanser, that you choose target creature, and it can't have counters put on it. So he plays a Johnny Pridemate, and I play Sun Cleanser. The only time that's going to be relevant in any in this format ever. And it was just hysterical. We were laughing about it. Sean was at the next table over, and he's like, I thought you guys had a judge called on you, and we're just over there having a good time. And then the second was actually today in the team trios. I had Spitfire and Sarkhan in my deck, and I had Spitfire something earlier in the game, and I ultimated Sarkhan, so there's four triggers on the stack. hit something with it, buy it back, and then hit something
with
it.
Yeah.
And he's like, he just looks at me and goes, you were going to win with the 4/5/5 dragons you just created.
Sometimes at Limited, you just got to live the dream if you get the chance to do it.
Yes. So that was definitely my number three. Number two, the food has just been phenomenal. The steak, we had a steak sandwich today at this little British pub for lunch, and that was just amazing. Number one has definitely been Booze Cube. Talked about this with these guys multiple times over the years, and I've always known, I'm like, I need to print one out. I need to get this done.
Wait a minute. You mean the first rule of Booze Cube isn't no talking about Booze Cube?
No, no,
okay,
it's not.
Take a shot.
So you got to find the Booze Cube and look at the list just to understand it. And now I'm even more motivated to have this done. And so we can start drafting it in Louisville because I'm super amazed by it.
Complete shout out to Scott at the Booze Cube. You can find him on social media. It is rare in life that you are aware when you are in the presence of somebody who is just on another level. Call it the presence of genius, call it the level of inspiration, whatever you may attribute to it. The man is a gifted card designer and mad genius.
And designed to have fun. I mean, some of them are socially awkward, inappropriate, whatever you want to say, but you kind of have to, like when you're playing Cards Against Humanity, you have to give yourself over to that and be offended.
Yes.
And just know that you're looking in the mirror at some of the darker images of Magic and the social experience and the human experience. I have not had more fun in a Magic the Gathering setting drafting non-Magic the Gathering cards ever.
Here's what I took away from it. It felt like an adults-only unset.
Totally. That's a great way to say it.
I mean, here's what you got to imagine in your mind, and I wish we had a picture of this. Brian Tibbetts, grown Brian Tibbetts, on the floor, in the kitchen.
6 foot, 191 pounds, I think, right now.
After this weekend, maybe 195.
Okay, been working out. This is a guy who has always stayed athletically fit, plays with his two daughters. So forearms of steel, but he does have that craft beer storage unit in front like I do, and you do as well, Matt.
Oh, absolutely. And so arm wrestling. Well, he was a very small male, probably 100 pounds soaking wet, and this was happening on the kitchen floor.
And this was one of the crew that came with Mike and Scott. Mirabu, we had a great time. He had a great time. It was great.
I wasn't going to pick Joe. I could have picked either of my mates, and Joe looked like he could have taken me.
You won the feats of strength.
I won. So I cast feats of strength, and feats of strength is if you win the arm wrestle, you gain 20 life.
It is a direct homage to feats of strength from Seinfeld.
Yes, and so thankfully we didn't, have to do anything else in the episode. But if I would have lost, I would have had to sacrifice all non-land permanents. So this was my last gasp, and let it be known, Mirabeau did win the game.
It's just otherworldly and so much fun. This speaks to one of those ways that people say Magic is a game. Yes, we compete at it. Yes, we like to go to events and try to play Legacy at a high level and compete at GPs at whatever the format is when we're available to travel. But Magic's also a game, and it can be a game with friends and a game with new friends and lead to those memories. And Matt, that's a great number one to point out how we play the game. Guys, there was another event going on this weekend. Star City Games Indianapolis, Modern. 948 players in the main event. Shout out to my man Devin from the Quincy crew. 27 points, 64th place after the weekend. He is on Grixis Death Shadow in Modern. Michael Olson, who got a 2-1 win over Ryan Ferries in the final. Michael Olson on Jund, taking down Burn. That is an old-school classic matchup, Brian. Shocked that there's not Mardu Pyromancer taking down Titan Shift?
It just seems like Modern is a place that you can brew and have really, really good luck. I would not be surprised if you see Affinity at the top of the standings. I would not be surprised to see Modern. I would not be surprised to see Jund, because it really does exactly what people want to do. Burn was a little surprising, I think, to make it all the way to the finals. I feel like that deck has weaker matchups, and whatever, maybe those weak matchups were playing sealed here in Minneapolis instead of Indy. I don't know if it was the Midwest draw.
Rest of the top eight: Model Green Tron, two Humans decks, Red Blue Storm Affinity, and the deck of the weekend that had people talking, Matt, Blue Red Wizards. This deck was kind of speculated upon that it had some power to be an aggressive option in the format, and it was one of the big winners this weekend.
Well, yeah, if you can run eight lightning bolts, why wouldn't you want to run eight lightning bolts?
We're recording on the front porch at our VRBO. You may hear in the open air some background noises. Another fire truck just went.
And it was an antique fire truck.
Marauding by. Another one. Yeah, maybe that's how they're financing the public transportation makeover going on here in the Twin Cities this weekend. They just sell some of the antique fire trucks. Modern won this weekend by Jund over Burn. Modern Classic, Matt, 231 players. I felt like this group, even though we're not going to get into the whole top eight, more accurately reflected the Modern metagame that we've been seeing at GPs. Infect took down Burn in the finals, so Burn, twice a bridesmaid, never a bride this weekend. We saw Infect, we saw KCI, we saw Humans doing more in this. This metagame sort of reflected, I think, what we've seen at large from Modern of late. Mardu Pyromancer was in the top eight. As you look at Modern kind of holistically, still the Wild Wild West?
So I actually think we're starting to get to Modern the same place that we are, or we were, with Legacy, where it's becoming a circular format. You're starting to get these decks, like Grixis Death Shadow is a good one, where I think it's starting to become good again, you know, and then it's just going to start traveling around in a circle. You know, I always claim Sneak and Show lived outside that circle within Legacy. I think that KCI is actually one that lives outside the circle, because you can't, it's hard to hate out KCI. It's also very hard to play the deck. I would not be shocked to see a lot of KCI players within the Pro Tour that's coming up next week. If that happens, unfortunately, what's going to happen is instead of them getting a lot of interest, you're just going to go to the other formats, and you're not going to get the normal outrage you would when 30% of the room or 20% of the room is on KCI, because I do think it's that good.
Are we at a circular format like Matt's talking about? Because when you get to that place, that is traditionally the anchor of a healthy format in which decks can prey upon each other, and it establishes sort of a known metagame. And that's been one of the complaints about Modern, is that there's so many playable decks, players want 50-card sideboards.
Who doesn't want a 50-card sideboard? I want to be prepared for every matchup I go into. And, you know, if I'm playing Affinity, I want to have as many wear tears as possible. And, you know, Kolaghan's Commands playing Mardu Pyromancer, etc. It's just not going to happen. You have to hedge your bets. And do you have to kind of guess and be savvy enough to make the right choice? Yes. Do you have to be skilled enough with the deck to make it through those tough matchups in a close 2-1? Yes. Do you have to get lucky and maybe dodge some of those matchups? Yes. And that's the whole thing about tournament magic is, you know, we take these matchups in some ways and we read so much into them because this is what the pros are doing. Well, you don't know what 15-round opponents you had before. You just see what the top eight is. That's what's really published, right? It's like, oh, yeah, it made top eight. Well, what about the 9 through 16th? We on this cast a lot, I know Matt and I especially, always scour the 16th through the 24th or the 9th through the 32nd list to see what almost made it, what could be tweaked and things of that nature. I think that it's a circular format because as people adjust, the decks that were preyed upon adjust back. and they make changes to those decks. And yes, that is a healthy format, and that's exactly what you're going to do. This is why you see different builds of Mardu Pyromancer. You see different builds of Black-Red Humans. It's not just like a or Black-Red Hollow One, excuse me. Bant Spirits, the Blue-Red Wizards from this weekend. I feel like that's the great thing about Modern is you can constantly be innovating within these archetypes to give yourself a little bit of an edge.
Standard Classic this weekend, 116 players. Josh Satterfield had a 2-0 win over Matt McCreary. That was Mono Black Zombies in Standard, taking down Red Black Midrange. Red Black Midrange had another top 8 appearance. Mono Green Aggro, 3 top 8 appearances. We were talking about this deck a little bit today. It is set up with its core pieces. Of course, it's going to lose some stuff at rotation, but its core pieces are still going to be there at rotation. So develop a strategy to account for the green menace that's coming in Standard.
Runicarmosaur, one of the core pieces. Right
Thank
there.
You, Matthew, yeah. for your insight.
I know. Okay.
Draw one for bringing that up. Mono Black Zombies and Blue Black Midrange, also part of the top 8. It's going to be interesting. Standard's about to rotate, so we're not going to get too deep into this, but having just played Legacy for 2 out of 3 of us this weekend, talked at length about Modern and then brought up Standard, Pro Tour 25 is coming up this weekend here in the Twin Cities where we're at, recording episode 111 of Tryhards. It is going to be Team Trios, Legacy, Modern, and Standard. So what I want from each of you, very quickly, you have absolute omnipotence on what your theoretical team plays at each seat. Brian, pick the deck in each format that your team plays this weekend.
Oh my goodness, that is such a hard, hard thing to do. Okay, so I'm going to start with Legacy, and I feel like you have to pick a deck that has got a huge amount of power, can win kind of out of nowhere. I would go with Omni Show, basically. Sneak and Show with the Omniscience package, usually 2. It can get out fast. If you don't answer what they're doing, it can be really, really hard to come back from. It has some weaknesses, obviously. If they don't have kind of a fast hand, it can die to Rug Delver or some of those other fast hands. For Modern, I feel like a Mardu Pyromancer grindy mid-range deck is the way to go. It's got so much game against most of the field. It's got a lot of disruption. It's got a lot of removal. That's what I would go with. Man, it's so hard for me who's not played Standard. I'm going to kind of have to defer to you guys, and you can laugh at me later for this. But if I was going to play anything in Standard for the Pro Tour, I think I would probably play Mono Green Stompy because it is such a great, direct, unanswerable challenge to those decks that just have to interact with it. And so the Mono Green deck, I think, can be a little bit of a glass cannon, but that sounds like a pretty good thing to do.
Matt, same question to you. You're the omnipotent Matt Hurley. This is only imaginary. What 3 decks
That's
is
what you
your
think
team
because
playing?
I'm on another level than you. These are the 3 decks that I don't think you can play together, but I think they're going to be the best in the room. First off, in Standard, I think that the Paradoxical Outcomes Storm deck is actually secretly one of the best decks in the format. I could see that. Now, I don't know if you're including the Aetherflux Reservoir because there's some copies that are cutting that, and they're just going over to creating a bunch of Thopter tokens, basically beating down with Karns. But I think it's going to be some type of Storm deck utilizing like Mox Amber. One of my calls recently on the in the elevator. In Modern, I actually think it's going to be KCI. I think KCI is a very high-level deck, and I think that it's probably one of the better decks in the format, but it's just so difficult to pilot, and I think we're going to see a lot of KCI. In Legacy, I really like Stoneblade, but I think that on the Legacy side of things, you want a relatively quick game, so you're going to go with like an Omni Show, Sneak and Show style deck, and you may see some, you know, some tweaks here and there, but I think that's what you want to go with just to have that quick game. And you probably put your weakest player within Legacy or onto that Legacy deck, or you put your player onto it that is really a Legacy specialist. But I think if you have a Legacy specialist, I think it's Stoneblade, but or Deathblade or something. And if it's a weaker player, you put them on Omni Show.
I just want you to know I wrote these picks down before I was asking you guys this question. We're all on the same page on Legacy, which kind of scares me. The Grixis Omni Show lists that can play Show and Tell, Omniscience, Sneak Attack, Thoughtseize, those sorts of things, I think is where you want to be this weekend. In Modern, this is fun for me because we're all on a separate page. I really like where the Titan Shift decks are at right now in Modern and the questions they ask of their opponents. And in Standard, the Grixis Bolas decks, especially the more controlling Grixis Bolas decks. Well, if you've been at GP Minneapolis or you are going to Pro Tour 25, one thing you're going to have to do to get where you need to go from the parking garage to the event hall is get in the elevator.
My card this week is Hostage Taker. I think that, especially with Bolas, Blue Black's going to be a powerful... This fight's in that Bolas position, but I think that Hostage Taker is going to be really vital to fight against Bolas and, you know, as a control-style deck. Less than $2, I'd say pick them up because this at one point this was like an $18 rare. Ixalan cards are really going to be expensive. I mean, we have Carnage Tyrants that are $20 and they're not even seeing that much play. With rotation, Hostage Taker all in under $2.
Sean's not here right now to wrap up this segment. He's been taken hostage here on Tryhards. The first time somebody hostage takers an opponent's Bolas, then casts it and flips it, there's going to be a table flip to go with that, I think. What are we going to brew this week? We've been on the road with such sweet brew in our glasses. I can't imagine what we're going to get into this week. Brewmaster, what are you challenging us with?
Challenging you to bust open one of the better Planeswalkers that I've seen in a long time to pair with another Planeswalker from the current set. In Standard, who am I speaking of? Tezzeret, Artifice Master. I feel like paired with Karn, there is so much power among these two with the artifacts. Not that it just jumps out at you, but maybe there's something with, you know, Mox Amber in this whole thing. So let's get right to it. Tezzeret, Artifice Master is 2 blue and 3 generic. Legendary Planeswalker starts at 5 loyalty. +1, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. For 0, draw a card. If you control 3 or more artifacts, draw 2 cards instead. And the ultimate on Tezzeret, Artifice Master, -9, which means he has to stay in play for 5 turns. You get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, search your library for a permanent card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. This may seem like a reach, gentlemen, but I feel like there is so much untapped power here, along with Karn, Scion of Urza. What are you going to do with Tezzeret, Artifice Master? Sean, I'm going to start with you this week.
The question that I want answered is, what percentage of Ancestral Recall is good enough for Standard? If you zero him and draw a card, you get 33% of Ancestral Recall no matter what. And if you achieve the exceedingly low bar of being able to put 2 artifacts into play in, let's face it, most likely an artifact-heavy deck, maybe not creatures, but utility artifacts, you get 66% of an Ancestral Recall for free each turn that you keep him on the battlefield. That sounds very good to me. He starts with an absurd 5 loyalty. So he's not a Planeswalker that protects himself while plussing in the traditional sense, but just plussing and creating a 1/1 Thopter artifact token with flying. So he protects himself in a bit of an unusual way, but I think it's going to be good enough because his starting loyalty, if you do that, is 6. I think the only question that I have left about Tezzeret is he good enough in a deck that has artifacts as the secondary theme, or do you need artifacts to be the primary theme?
Hurley, what about you? Are you as high on this Tez as Sean is?
The problem I found was that you have to water your deck down enough with non-artifacts to play both Karn and Tezzeret. And, like, usually I'm running Psy, Master Thopterist as yep. well, so that you can sacrifice artifacts and draw cards. I don't know. There's a deck there. Don't get me wrong. 100% there's a deck there. But I just am not sure exactly where that deck is. Where I think people are failing is I think you want to build a Grixis-style artifact deck. The reason is Phyrexian Scriptures. Phyrexian Scriptures reads as a 4-drop, put a +1/+1 counter up to 1 target creature, it becomes an artifact creature. Then it's level 2, it's a saga. It's level 2 is destroy all non-artifact creatures. My question there is, why are people not doing that? And you still have, like, Pia Nalar, you know, out there. You still have some good red cards. I don't know if this is going to be, like, that Power Stone Shard deck that's running around. Like, that's part of one of those combo decks that's running around. I think right now we have too many cards within Standard to create these, you know, like, these mono green decks and stuff. Like, once the pool gets much smaller, I'm 100% behind saying, okay, yeah, we're playing Tez, Psy, this, and then we can play Phyrexian Scriptures. The more I have looked at this, the more I think you just want to run a control deck with an artifact sub-theme. Even if Karn's only pumping out 3-3s, 2-2s, maybe 4-4s, I still think that's good enough.
I really like where you're going with that. The idea that cropped up when I started thinking a lot about Tezzeret was, what other Planeswalker could I pair it with? And obviously Karn came to mind because of the artifact generation, but also Teferi seems really, really good. Obviously, it's blue, same color. And I think a blue-white kind of control deck using this artifact theme. You've also got cards like Metallic Mimic. If you talk about something like Thopters, something that can just grow Thopters really, really big, that kind of thing, or even Servos with Servo Expedition. That's the kind of, you know, brewing I would love to see somebody do to kind of take over the battlefield with these colorless creatures instead of getting big blue creatures, green creatures, red creatures, what have you. I feel like that is where you go, and that is where something like Tez is going to shine. Drawing cards, as Sean said, Ancestral Recall, when Karn's in play, when Teferi's in play, when Tez is in play, you have almost unlimited draw capability with your Planeswalkers, and it's really, really hard for this format and standard to deal with that. And I would love to see somebody and make Tez kind of the focal point, because I think that's something that is yet to be explored in this format.
Tezzeret, bringer of the colorless dawn. He was the sixth bringer that we never knew we needed. We got a Wallord we didn't know we needed, so this set continues to give us gifts as we go forward with this summer in Magic. Guys, this is a loaded question after what we've been through this weekend. But what'd you do to get better at Magic this week, Matt?
Got my straight-up kicked. And, you know, honestly, we did a bunch of sealed pulls. It was amazing practice to open up. What did we open up Friday night? 10 sealed pulls?
2.5 boxes.
2.5 boxes worth of sealed pulls. We would build a pool in 30 minutes so that it would mimic what we would do on Saturday. Then we'd have other people look at it. That was just awesome. And while we'll probably never play this sealed format again, especially with RTR, you know, Return to Ravnica coming out, I do think it made me better, like, to speed build, as I call it. So all the practice I've had, all the interaction, talking with other people, having a second, you know, Brian, as you said, having a second group in the house that is a totally different group than us. Great all around, and getting better at Magic just was playing with different people and having them help us and us helping them.
Yeah, the working together is what I did to get better at Magic this week. Stowing your ego, because we're all sensitive to the way we play, the way we build, the way we like to build. Well, are they suggesting that build, or do they not understand us and how I like to play? Just stowing that and being open to ideas from other players who are also smart. I think once you admit that other players are smart, you get a lot smarter, because you start to take that advice and you grow in the game and working together with other people on understanding a format. And this is the biggest investment we've made in a limited format in quite a long time, and I know it paid off. And I got to follow up with one softball here, guys. I love doing this podcast with you guys. I love getting together usually on Monday nights, each from our own abode. But sitting here right now, if I had the power in the world to grant anything, it would be the opportunity to do this live together like we're doing it right now. Each week. That's not something that's going to be able to happen on a regular basis. I understand that, but this has been so much fun for us to get together for tryhards. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I think you hit it, being open to building new things. I alluded to this earlier in the cast tonight. There was a combo that I had never seen kind of play out in this sealed format until somebody just wrecked me with it today during our round three. Act of Treason plus Thud. You know, stealing your creature, attacking you with it, and then sacrificing that very creature
for four mana.
Yeah, for four mana. To take out one of your creatures is just absolutely bonkers. And my first instinct is to look at that and say, yeah, that's really great. Man, I just got wrecked by this. Appreciate kind of the intricacies of the game, looking for that. I loved building this mono blue painter deck. I'm looking forward to kind of continuing this little journey with it for a little while and having people help me along the way and not being closed off to suggestions. I've already made some changes just from the stuff I played yesterday. I'm sure there will be many more going forward, to the point of maybe just stowing the deck, saying this is terrible, or taking it to a first place finish at Eternal Weekend. Who knows? So... The look Hurley just gave me was hilarious, everybody. So, no, being open to those experiences, being open to new ideas about this game, if nothing else, Booze Cube, Sealed, Legacy, all goes into that in this very, very cool weekend here in Minneapolis.
To everyone who has made this weekend memorable and special, we raise our glass to you. We hope you've enjoyed episode 111 of TryHards, live from GP Minneapolis. Oh, you brave soul. We'll see you next week here on TryHards.